about that kind of control that was needed. We're talking about the kind of control that somebody was going to join anyway, and somebody made $5,000 off them joining. That's the fraud. It's not that somebody didn't go all the way through Ascension and report to Basic and actually become a member. It is, in fact, that people that were going to do that anyway, somebody got paid for them doing it that didn't deserve it. That was the fraud. So I get that you had that control in.
Okay, ma'am.
But nobody put a control in. And did you realize at DocuPack that there was no control for that?
Well, may I take just a moment and walk you through the controls that we did have in place?
Sure.
The first primary function was to determine whether an RA was eligible to participate in the program. That fact was determined by government-supplied data, which would give us the duty status of an individual, and if they could not participate, if there were certain programmatic things that they were doing within the Guard, such as if they were associated with the recruiting office, that would eliminate them.
You had to eliminate the recruiters.
Yes, ma'am. So the first action was to try to make sure that there was a separation off of ARIS files. And then secondly, we would bounce last names versus last names of recruiters to see if it was a spouse of a recruiter or a sibling or a dependent of a recruiter. This was community-based, so we did run across that. So they would be disqualified. Secondly, when an RA nominated...
An RA stands for recruiting assistant.
Yes,
which
ma'am.
Which were essentially your subcontractors.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. So in order to nominate a potential soldier, you would have to be in an eligible status.
Right.
And you would have to put in PII of that individual.
Right.
In addition to that information, we required, in the beginning, it was a radio button, 7 questions, where you met them, how you met them, and a series of questions. After the program was instituted, and I don't remember the exact date, but we did alter that to be able to put in free typing, which would require the RA to fill out all of that information prior to it being recognized in our system that it was a legitimate nomination.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand this. In the beginning, you had to answer questions, where you met this person, what else besides where you met them?
What's most likely their MOS they would be interested in? And I don't remember all 7, and I apologize. What would be a likelihood of a time frame of him or her assessing?
And then you converted that they had to write some kind of summary as opposed to answering questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And what did the summary have to contain?
It would be those same questions, but they would not be fixed questions. They would have to free type that information in.
So they could, and what kind of check was there that what they put in was true?
Well, that leads me to where I was headed, and you made mention of it just a few moments ago about trying to recognize and identify things that could have helped eliminate some of the potential fraud. And looking backwards and thinking about this an awful lot over the last week and a half, if we had created an automated response, it could have been an email, because we did have to get the potential soldier's contact information. If we would have sent out a verification email to that potential soldier who had been nominated, basically restating the facts that had been put into the system, by whom it had been put in by, where they would have to certify the information that we had was legitimate, I think would have gone a long ways.
And, you know, this is what kills me about this, you guys. This is like Basic. I mean, you just assumed that whoever was typing this in was telling the truth. And nobody ever checked to see if they were lying. I mean, you're handing out millions of dollars. No questions asked.
Good. I'd just like to clarify one thing. We did have account coordinators on our staff, and those individuals were making anywhere from 25,000 to 30,000 phone calls a month, either reaching out to the recruiting assistants to verify information that they had put into our system, and also making attempts to contact the potential soldier.
Well, it's going to be really hard to find the soldier at that point in time.
That is
calling
correct.
Them is going to be hard.
Yes, ma'am.
And if you're going to call a liar and ask them, are you telling the truth, guess what they're going to say? Yeah. They're not going to say, no, I lied. Was it, did it say on the form after they typed this in, was there anything on there that you can go to prison if you lied here?
Yes, ma'am. That was in part of our...
That didn't stop. That didn't stop.
No, ma'am.
Well, I think that requiring some kind of sign-off by the recruit, and obviously I think you'd need to figure out a kind of control that wouldn't require you to get a hold of them in person in light of what we were asking them to then do. I mean, they're basic. They're all over the country. But I guess this is why I'm frustrated.
Yes,
that these kind of controls, either through contracting at the beginning or through oversight through the program, were never put in place. And there didn't appear to be, there was a lot of stovepiping here. A lot of stovepiping. General, you were looking at numbers. And you were looking at your contract requirements. And there was an assumption that fraud prevention officers in the states were aware of what they specifically needed to be looking after. Frankly, they could have taken a random sample of the recruits, and pretty quickly they would have found out that there was fraud going on. So that's what's so frustrating about this. I think it is really important for me to point out this quote that you have in your written testimony, Colonel Jones. You said potential wrongdoing on the part of contracted individuals were not believed to be within our authority.
Yes, ma'am. I should have said subcontractors, because we were not allowed to talk to subcontractors. It should have been subcontractors, and that was what I was meaning that in the context, ma'am, was that was at the state level to do the fraud mitigation plan, the follow-up, the investigative work to check on what was happening via the contractors. The only way that we could have known for sure, ma'am, was if we had had access to a recruiter's bank account, even non-sequentially named, and could have had a list of bank accounts, and then we could have monitored any transactions, any deposits from a contractor. That would have been the ultimate catch-all to say, okay, that's wrong, because you know you're not allowed to be in the program. When discussed, we were told you cannot have access to anything like that without a court order with a known suspicion of wrongdoing.
Well, did at that point, did you feel comfortable contacting Criminal Investigation Division of the Army for assistance?
Well, ma'am, we were told, we weren't told. I never knew. Again, when I was there, the numbers that were available were 2, 5, and 2, that there were a total of 9 incidents going on.
So you didn't have any sense that this was going on whatsoever, none?
Well, I had what I just told you, the same knowledge that CID had, that in 2006 there were 2, 7 there were 5, and 9 there were 2 more. It wasn't until 10 and 11 where they started to see it, and then it started to become more prevalent. Prevalent, yes, ma'am. Thank you, sorry.
Well, we have dozens and dozens of pages of deficiencies that the auditors found in the contract, and we have a contractor that it doesn't appear took as seriously the potential fraud problem here, and I understand it didn't impact your bottom line other than the fact that it went away. I assume this was a profitable contract for your company.
Yes, ma'am.
So is there anything that I haven't asked about that you feel like that has been characterized unfairly here? I really do think that there is a systematic failure along the way here of people to talk to one another. I think the chain of command got in the way on this one. I think the decentralized nature of the Guard contributed to the problem. There's a wide variety of things that actually occurred here that allowed this fraud to flourish. And we got to figure out how to fix it without blowing anything up that we don't want to blow up. And that's where I need you all to give us input. I need you to talk about how you have some kind of ability, some kind of authority over contracting, how you take more responsibility for fraud other than just saying it's the tags. Because it's not the tags money. This money is all coming out of the central budget, right? This money didn't come. This money came straight from Washington, didn't it? So, you know, shouldn't we have some kind of fraud oversight in the Guard Bureau here that has a specific responsibility of going out and doing spot audits for programs with this kind of money that's being paid out by civilians who sign up online?
Yes, ma'am.
And there's not that position now, I assume.
I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of.
No, not that I'm aware of. I don't know how the Joint Staff is organized because, you know, as they deal down, you know, to touch the United States property and fiscal officers, you know, for the most part, they mirror whatever's out there. So, you know, I don't know if it exists over there. It certainly didn't exist with us other than providing overall guidance, and I think we nailed it pretty good in our, you know, our op plan and our op order. In fact, I read somewhere in one of the reports, and I didn't know what the heck a QASP was. You know, I mean, we had lots of things. We were dealing with the $40 billion worth of equipment upgrade, and
there's no question your plate was full. That's why I'm saying it appeared that your fraud control was having a VTC with adjutant generals every month saying, if you get caught with fraud, you're going to screw this up. Well, with all due respect, General, that's not really aggressive fraud control. I think you were a powerful guy, and you were in charge of the Guard Bureau, and not that these tags didn't need, because you did have the power of the purse. But having a VTC once a month and saying don't have any fraud didn't appear to get it done in this instance. And I think we probably need to have a more aggressive fraud structure at the Guard Bureau.
Well, I think it's an excellent point. There's no doubt about it. And we certainly wouldn't argue with it at all.
Great.
But it still gets back to the issue, you know, of some states did a remarkably good job, and that's going to come out. And one of the things I look forward to when you finally bring this to an end is what happened out there in all the states.
Well, we're gonna continue to work on that, and we will publish a ranking of the states when they have gotten to the point that the criminal investigations are completed by virtue of statute of limitations or the investigations being complete. Now, that may not be. They got a lot of work still to do. In fact, CID let us know that some of these investigations might go all the way to 2016. So it's going to be a while before the dust settles and we really figure out how many people we're going to put in jail on this. But at the point in time that it does, then we'll do a report card and we'll go after the states that did such a poor job at this.
You know, if you can really make a difference, I really hate to see, in spite of everything that's been written about the program, I hate to see the baby thrown out with the bathwater. You asked something of Mike a while ago. I viewed the whole program as a test program as to whether we could move in and cut down the total number of recruiters in our force. Now, when you do this math, you know, if we took, say, the 4,000 recruiters and cut them to 200 and made them general managers out there in the states, now, I was working this issue, but we had to make sure that we could pull the whole load and recruit it with the GRAP force, and we basically proved that. But if you did that, and if you were after 50,000 recruits, and you paid them just using $3,000, so for the math, that's $150 million. $150 million. If you took the same 4,000 recruiters and say, and don't use 18,000, take the other piece out of it, because now I'm giving you the admin load in there, and you say the retired pay accrual and pay allowances and the whole thing is, and just say it's 100,000, and you know as well as I do, it's much more than that. Okay, that's 400 million up against 150 using this other system. And then to get out the bigger issue, what if you took all of the Army stuff, for instance, and just used one advertising system rather than three? And, oh, by the way, what if you could move that over to where that was the program to recruit folks? And that's what we were doing with Active First with Secretary Guerin, and we proved that we could do it.
Well, I think all those
are in the billions.
Yeah, and those are all good ideas. And I hope and I will convey to Guard leadership currently and to the Joint Chiefs and to the Secretary of Defense and all of them, I do think that there is better efficiencies we can realize out of our recruiting system. I think we've wasted a hell of a lot of money on a lot of things that haven't worked. And I'm not saying that the premise of this program is valuable. But I'll guarantee you this. I'm going to yell at the top of my lungs if somebody tries to roll out this program without fraud control in it again. Because that's what happened. This program got rolled out and implemented without fraud control. And you can't do this kind of program without fraud control. And I know that we can sit here all day and talk about the value of the premise. But execution is the problem here. And the way it was drawn up and without the controls embedded in it, whether it's more fraud prevention at the states, whether it's oversight of fraud prevention at the Bureau, whether it's requirements in the contract in terms of recruits having to sign off as to who recruited them, there's a variety of things that could be done. And I think we need to get to the bottom of all this and get it straightened out before we even start talking about rolling out this program again. But we're not going to end this hearing without recognizing there's value to the premise. It's a lot more efficient to send people into neighborhoods and to send people into churches and to send people into college campuses that are members of those communities that can sell the Guard much more effectively than putting the name on a video game ad. I'm all for that. I'm not big on the video game ads, just so you know. Is there anything else anybody wants to add for the record before we conclude the hearing? I really appreciate all of you being here. We will have follow-up questions for the record, and this will be a continuing area of focus of investigation for the subcommittee until we finally get to the bottom of all the fraud that's occurred. And I particularly want to reiterate on the record, until we find out how many of these leaders, how many of these colonels, how many of these the major general that's been implicated, how we make sure that they're held accountable as they have done great disservice to the men and women they lead. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.